Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. Good morning, I'm Charlie Herman. 5 years ago, this Sunday, Lehman Brothers filed for bankruptcy. If you want to mark a moment when the financial crisis really started, that could be argued is the moment when it happened. The entire global financial system was threatened. The U.S. plunged further into recession, one that we're still recovering from today. Well, a new documentary that opens today in New York called Money for Nothing, Inside the Federal Reserve, puts the blame for the financial collapse squarely on the bank.
Greenspan had kept rates so low for so long that he turned an overheated housing market into the greatest credit bubble in history. It would alter the course of the American economy for decades to come.
Wow, heavy stuff there. Well, joining me, regular contributor Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine and Alan Blinder, economics professor at Princeton and a former vice chairman of the Federal Reserve. And Alan, I should add, you're actually in this documentary and you have written a book about the financial crisis. 5 years later, is the conventional wisdom that the Federal Reserve is to blame for what happened?
I don't believe it is. There are a few people that claim that. But while I was in the movie saying a variety of things, I certainly don't believe that. If I was ranking causes of the collapse, and I sort of do that in my book after the music stopped, not literally but figuratively, the Fed is in there, has some culpability, but it's well down the list. And in fact, I would emphasize a much greater culpability for not reining in banking practices, letting the banks make such bad loans, than I would for the low interest rates.
That it was more an issue of regulation.
More an issue of regulation than of the Fed's monetary policy, yes.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. And, you know, one of the points that was raised in the film is how leveraged banks were. And, you know, sure, a low interest rate environment might encourage leveraging, but the Fed did not force banks to use only 2% of their own money and 98% debt to do their daily business. I think it's much more about whether or not you believe, did the Fed sort of create an environment, did Greenspan in particular maybe create an intellectual underpinning for a certain kind of environment that encouraged the Fed to maybe paper over more systemic problems in the economy?
It's much more that. I mean, you know, laissez-faire was running rampant in those bad old days. And Alan Greenspan's, I think, personal attitudes were part of that. But the monetary policy per se was a very, very small part of that.
So when you talk about leverage, this idea that for every dollar I have that I receive in a deposit, maybe I'm loaning out $10 or $20, they were going to really high extremes that led to the collapse of Lehman Brothers and the instability at other banks. 5 years later, where are we at with that? Are things better or where's the leverage?
Well, you know, I have a cover story this week looking at where we are 5 years on from the crisis. And one thing that's interesting is while a number of the big banks, I will say, have reduced risk and leverage, that we don't have the levels that a lot of people, I think, would like to see. And in fact, some of the new rules around capital requirements aren't going to come into effect in real implementation for several years. So there is still a period of time where bubbles can grow. And we have to ask ourselves, do we really have a new system in place that will prevent that kind of overblown leverage happening again?
You know, we use this term banks. It's important to distinguish investment banks from banks, commercial banks. The super high leverage, Rana referred a moment ago to like 98% debt, 2% equity. No bank was doing that, but a number of investment banks were getting perilously close to that. And they've been chastened by that experience and are now operating with substantially less leverage. And a question, of course, is as the good times come back, how long will that last? The banks are also operating with less leverage, partly because they're also chastened by what happened. But first of all, it's much less than the investment banks. And secondly, it's partly because of changes in regulations.
Since the financial crisis, there have been a lot of laws and regulations that have been passed. So is the financial system on a more secure footing?
I think it's on a more secure footing, although I would caveat that by saying that a lot of the rules that have been passed haven't been implemented, and only 40% of the rules of Dodd-Frank have actually been written. So I think that
Dodd-Frank, the large bill that was passed.
The large financial reform bill that was passed by Congress. And I think that that's problematic because as time passes, and particularly as we get into a more robust recovery, people forget and they think, oh, you know, the crisis is over and we've done the hard work and things are okay. But unless we really keep our foot on the gas and get those rules finished and get them implemented, we could be back to where we started.
Oh, yeah, I very much agree with what Rana just said. I would just add a couple of things. First of all, she alluded to the fact that I want to emphasize that the higher capital requirements, that is the lower leverage requirements on commercial banks, are not taking effect for a while. Yes, a while is not till 2019. I think it's embarrassing to give until 2019 for the world. This is not just a U.S. story, for the world's banks to comply with the higher capital requirement.
Normally at this point I would ask the two of you to tell me what stories you're looking ahead to, but I'm wondering, with the Federal Reserve chairmanship about to change, how do you think looking ahead that's really going to affect, you know, the next 4 years, the next 5 years?
Well, I think no matter who gets the position, and we've debated that on the show before, I think the big question is, how is this massive asset buying program, quantitative easing, going to end, and what effect is that going to have on the real economy? And going back to the film about the Fed, one of the interesting points that's raised at the end is the disconnect between how the Fed's asset buying program has bolstered the stock market, but the fact that it has not had much of an effect on the real economy. And I think that is the meta story of not just the next few weeks or months, but potentially years.
Alan?
The Fed has used, and this is very rational to do so, its more powerful weapons first. And then when it used them up, it went to its second most and third most and so on. It's gotten itself down to very weak weaponry, and there's not very much left in the closet.
Well, we'll be keeping an eye on all the developments in the financial markets here at WNYC.org/business. You can, of course, take this program with you as a podcast available on iTunes. I want to thank Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine and Alan Blinder at Princeton University. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Charlie Herman. This is Money Talking from WNYC.